Hi, I'm Kathy Forsty, music director at KC Cafe Radio. Bill Abernathy has been a great friend of mine and KC Cafe Radio for the last several years. In 2013, he recorded his first folk rock CD titled Changes, which received critical acclaim and gained him fans worldwide. In the last few months, Bill has released his second CD, Find a Way. The songs on Find a Way are about trying to find that balance in life. Find a Way has already received tracks appearing on both the Roots Music Report and the Radio Indie Alliance charts. So thank you, Bill, for joining us today on KC Cafe Radio. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. I'm excited to be here, and it's always good to talk to you. So we always have such a good time. Yeah,
it's always good to see you, too.
Yeah, there you go.
So I wanted to start off a little bit about the cover of the CD and then move into your background in music and then maybe talk a little bit more about the CD. The cover of the CD is really cool. Can you describe it to our listeners and tell you why you chose that cover for the CD?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, actually, about the cover of the CD. When I started to, put together the concepts for Find a Way, I found in the recording process that there's two things that always take the longest time, and they're both revolving around artwork. I ran across an artist, actually on Facebook of all places, that I really liked his style. I thought it was very expressive and kind of interesting and different. And so I sent him a message, and he and I talked, and I ended up consigning to him the work to create the Find a Way artwork. It's interesting, typically most albums in today's world have a big picture of the artist on the front, and this one doesn't, clearly. But what it has is through several communications, the artist's name is Damajan Frick. He's based out of Germany. And through various conversations, emails, messages, discussions that we had on the phone, I explained to him the concept of what I wanted to do about trying to maintain this balance that we need in life, the one that everyone talks about is work-life balance. And Kathy, as you know, I'm a pretty busy guy with my career, so it takes a bit of my time. So over the course of several months, Damajan came up with this concept of a gentleman, actually me, with a guitar in one hand and a briefcase in the other. Mm. On the right-hand side of the art, you can see some very business-related things. So there's a desk, a computer, that kind of thing. On the left side is a stage and some microphones and that kind of thing, typical music stuff. But probably the most interesting thing about the album is in the middle stands this guy who is in this labyrinth. Mm-hmm. That he's trying to work his way through. And I think the idea there is that, each of us have many, many decisions that we make every day in our lives, and being able to manage those decisions and still maintain some element of balance. Whether it's work-life balance, emotional balance, where you live, those kind of things. Being able to maintain that type of balance is absolutely critical to keep yourself sane, I think. The interesting thing is he used a little bit of artistic license. So, when we, in our discussions, we talked about the downside potential of losing this balance. And he depicted that in the painting as hot lava, right? So. Mm-hmm. Here's this guy, and he's working his way through this labyrinth, and his downside is if he would lose his balance, he would fall into this hot lava. The interesting thing, I think, for me, is if you look closely at the artwork, you'll see that where he stands right now, he has no clear path. There really isn't his next step. So he has to be able to manage that and find his way through this labyrinth. And the fact that there's no clear path means that sometimes you just have to kind of take a step of faith and say, I know that I'm headed in the right direction. Let's see what the next step brings. And so I think the way that he depicted all that on the album cover and in the original oil, which hangs in my house, is very interesting.
Yeah, it's a great cover. I love it. It reminds me of some other paintings I've seen of apocalyptic kind of paintings, I've seen.
Yeah.
And it's very colorful, and it really does speak to the title. I mean, Find a Way. It really does say that.
Well, I think what he did in the artwork is very, very much like music, right? Mm-hmm. Because, songs mean different things to different people. And since the album's been out, I've had several people comment on that, on the cover itself. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to hear what it says to other people, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like music.
Really they're proud of it.
Great. It's great. So you're talking about finding that balance between the corporate world and doing your music. How do you achieve that? How is that something that you do?
Well, it's hard. I mean, if you look at the concept, you know, the album is kind of a concept thing. So if you look at the concept of trying to maintain this balance, there are many times in my life that I've not been able to maintain that balance. And the title song is really a story about the day that my dad passed. I remember it, I mean, just like it was yesterday. It was in 1989 of all time, but a long time ago. But I was actually at work, sitting at my desk, and I got a call, and the call said, you know, things are not good. You need to come to the hospital. I looked at what I was doing. I thought, okay, I got 10 minutes. I'll be done with this. So I banged out 10 minutes worth of work and then drove to the hospital. And I missed seeing my dad the last time by about 5 minutes. I think that, you know, everybody has this vision of how they would like to spend their last moments, you know, with people that they love. And mine was clearly being able to sit with my dad and hold his hand and you know, tell him stories, tell him I loved him one more time, and just watch as the lights of this world go away and the lights of the next come on. I didn't get that chance. Mm. And it's because I had prioritized my time poorly. I had lost that balance, you know, at that moment. So it's interesting that as I, you know, the real theme of the album is based on something that my dad taught me. His comment was always that if you want something bad enough in life and you're willing to put in the blood, sweat, tears, and toil, you can always find a way to mm-hmm. make it happen. As I told the story, you know, of that day in the song, an interesting thing happened, actually. So, you know, you're a songwriter, so, you know, you're sitting around, you're deeping around with your guitar and you're playing this and playing that and trying to figure out how things go. And I finally got to where I was comfortable with the structure, and I played through the whole song. And at the end, I just kind of started playing this version of the Wildwood Flower. And it was not a conscious thing mm-hmm. by any stretch of the imagination. But the interesting thing is that's my dad's favorite song. Huh. And he always enjoyed listening to me play that song. And so, that was kind of, you know, when we recorded the song, if you listen to the end, you'll hear this acoustic version of the Wildwood Flower. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my way to find a way to say goodbye to my dad, to tell him that I loved him one more time.
It's almost, I mean, I don't know if you believe in spirits and things, but it's almost like his spirit was there with you and helping you write that song.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, you know, I think that music is kind of magic. Nobody really knows where it comes from. And I think when you're in that space, you're in that creative space and you're doing what you do, things happen. And in this particular case, you know, that the ending of that song just kind of happened. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Very nice. So you were channeling him somehow.
Yeah, well, I don't know about channeling, but, you know, we can discuss that. But yeah. But I think, you know, it was nice. And so, you know, anytime that I play that song, I tell the story. There's a really long story about my dad, but I always tell that story. And he used to like to see me play live when I was young and touring and doing all that stuff. And so I always play that and dedicate that to him when I play the tune. So
your music is such a big part of your life. Have you ever thought about giving up the corporate world and just doing music full time?
Well, you know, I did that when I was young. I started playing out around all over the Midwest when I was like 14. And I did a bit of touring and that kind of thing when I was young. Actually, the reason that I started my career was because I had some vocal problems. You know, I got some nodes, and I had to take about 6 months off from singing. And I went and got a job, you know, to pay the bills during that period of time. And then, you know, the healing process didn't go as well as planned. And so, you know, that was, I will be at my real job for 40 years next June. So it's been a while.
Right? Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy the music thing. It's, I think a lot like many songwriters, you know, I enjoy the process. I enjoy writing the songs. I enjoy I really enjoy the recording process and working in the studio. Playing live, I do, and I enjoy that. But as far as it being able to replace my corporate gig, yeah, probably not.
Yeah, well, yeah, being a musician is not going to replace that for the most part anyway. Unless you're like James Taylor or somebody like that, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's just it. And so, you know, it limits me, you know, a bit on what I can do regarding playing live. I have certain rules about when I play live. And one of the big rules is I have to be off a plane for 3 days because it kind of messes with my ears. As you know, I travel a bit, you know, in my job. So.
And not just around the United States. You're a world traveler. It's not like you're just going from coast to coast. So.
Yeah, I bounce around a bit. So, you know, that limits what I can do. But, you know, I have, since Findaway came out, you know, I have played a few shows and gotten some pretty nice feedback. And so, you know, I'm going to continue to do that. You know, I never had any illusion in my youth that, you know, a guy writing songs and singing songs sitting in the corner of a coffee shop was ever going to be able to make any money. But that's really what I like. Mm-hmm. I like small venues. I like being able to connect personally with the folks that are there, and I really enjoy that. And so, since Findaway's come out, I've done a few of those, and I really enjoy that. And so, I'm going to pursue that and do a few more of these smaller venue / listening room type shows, so that you know, I can connect with the audience, tell the stories. You know, my little mantra that I have for my songs is, if you hear a song that sounds like it was written about you, it may have been. I find that interesting, actually. I did a show in St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, and throughout the course of the evening, you know, you connect with different people in the audience. And one of the young couples that was there came up to me after the show, and we had a really nice conversation where one of the songs over the course of the evening had kind of met them in a place, you know, that they could relate to in their lives. And so, to me, that's worth it. If somebody in the audience can take something away, then you're good. You've done what you need to do, and it's fun.
Making fans one person at a time, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
I was wondering, you do travel the world and you go over the United States. Do you ever take your guitar with you and do shows or play gigs or just play for people?
Yeah, I have. It's hard because, you know, I'm a bit of a guitar freak. So, you know, some people have a guitar. I have a room of guitars. And so to break all that down, I was laughing, you know, because I really did well at this particular show in St. Louis, because I only took four. You know, that was good for me. But on occasion, I do take my guitar with me. Usually when I'm on the road, you know, doing my corporate thing, it's like 16, 18 hours a day. You know, it's real work. And so I don't have a lot of time. But when I'm going to be someplace for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, I always kind of pack a guitar with me and have done a couple of shows, you know, here, there, and yonder. So I'm going to do some in Germany. A friend of mine has contacted me there, friend/fan. So next time I go to Germany, we're going to book a few shows while we're over there, and I'll stay around and play a bit. So that'll be fun.
That'll be awesome. I know one of the guitars you have is a 9-string guitar. Can you tell our listeners how a 9-string guitar works and why did you decide to start playing that guitar?
Well, I'd like to tell you it was my idea, but it wasn't. So back in the day, the guy that traveled with me, that was kind of my sound guy, I played almost exclusively 12 strings in those days. And, you know, the 12 strings are beautiful and I love them, you know, but they're a bit high maintenance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember one particular time we were playing a festival thing in Chicago and it was hot. And, you know, I play acoustic instruments and they don't particularly like that. And so we fought. You know, I had three different 12 strings and there was somebody tuning one of those 12 strings all the time. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you've heard me play, and I tend to, you know, on occasion kind of beat my guitars a little bit and play a little hard. So we struggled with this, you know, the whole time that we were together and running around. And we got done, and it was actually after my voice got ill. And he went back to Nashville and was working, and he sent me a note. This was before email and all that, right? So he sent me a note and he said, I found your guitar. I bought it. I'm bringing it home. You'll have to pay me back when you get there. And I thought, well, that's weird because, you know, a guitar is a very personal thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, this is strange. Well, he showed up at my house with this mutant 9-string guitar. And I looked at it and I thought, well, that's weird, you know. Mm-hmm. But we found that number one, I love it. I love the sound that it makes. And it's the original Mutant. I have two, but the original one is by far my favorite guitar. I mean, it's like a 12 string. It just doesn't have the octave strings on the bass end. You can beat on them a bit more, and they, mm-hmm. they tend to hold tune a little bit better. And they have a very unique sonic ability. That one in particular is a very, very versatile guitar. It likes to be played, you know, not only just soft, pretty stuff, but, you know, it does well when you strum a bit harder and pound and beat on it a bit. So mm-hmm. it's an interesting instrument, and I absolutely love it. I actually have its sister my kids found for me. So I have two 9-strings, and one of them has a little bit of a darker sound. That's the one that I play for the most. And the other one I just call Blondie because it's a blonde guitar. It has a completely different sound. It likes to be played a different way, but they're my go-to guitars. They're the ones that I typically use when I'm writing all the time. When I play, they both go with me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
It'd be a lot easier to do like a drop D tuning kind of song with that guitar than it would with a 12 string.
Yeah, this is one of the problems that I have is I play in alternate tunings a lot.
Right.
And so hence the reason I carry a lot of guitars with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But I would think with having a 9-string sense, so you don't have to double those bottom strings, you know, that'd be a lot easier to do some alternate tunings than with some other guitar, so.
Yeah. So they're pretty versatile. Those two lovely little animals are, and they're very versatile. And you know, like I say, I love them. I like the sound that they make. So
who makes them?
These two were made by a luthier in Japan named Kuzo Yari.
Okay, Yari's. Yeah.
Yeah. He's since passed, and they were distributed in the United States by Alvarez. So
right.
The people called them Alvarez Yari's. Now both of mine were sent back to Japan and had some tweaking done on them. They're Yaris. You know, a lot of people call them Alvarez Yaris. I just call them Yaris. So mm-hmm. there you go.
Yeah. That's awesome. I didn't know that about those.
I actually almost bought the prototype.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was in Japan, and, you know, you're in a hotel, you don't have anything to do, and you can't speak the language, you know, so you go play around on the internet. And I found the original prototype for the 9-strings and thought about buying it, and then I saw the price tag and said, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So at what point did you start playing guitar? How old were you when you first started playing guitar?
Yeah, wow. Really young. So 6, 7, something like that. I had a brother who was, he's since passed, but he was about 9 years older than me. And he was into the music scene in Kansas City pretty heavily, not as a player necessarily, but he enjoyed all the music and the folk music at that time. You know, that was back in the 70s, you know, when instead of clapping, people would snap their fingers and all that. And he would drag me around. I think I was pretty much his chick magnet, to be honest with you. He dragged me around so that I could hear all this different music and all that. And he would have these jam sessions at our house, and his friends would come over and they'd all sit around and play Peter, Paul, and Mary and, you know, Paul Simon and, you know, all that style of music. And I would actually sneak out of my bedroom and go downstairs and listen to them. And that's really what got me interested in music across the board. And then they were nice enough that they, you know, they showed me a little bit of this and that. And then, you know, as I got a bit older, I took some lessons and, you know, went to the conservatory and all that. But that's really when I started, to be mm-hmm. honest. I was just a kid. So, yeah.
Yeah. Was anybody else in your family musical other than your brother?
All of the kids were pretty musical. So my oldest sister is really quite a vocalist. She's really a really, really solid singer, very good. My brother did the whole hippie music thing. My other sister sang a bit, and then there was me. So I kind of took it to a different place. But we were pretty musical, the whole family.
So what kind of music were you listening to as a kid? You mentioned, you know, like the Peter, Paul, and Mary. What was your influences?
That's very easy to pick out. In 1972, Dan Fogelberg came out with an album called Home Free.
Mm-hmm.
And an absolutely beautiful piece of music. That was the album. It's the only album ever in my whole life I sat down and learned how to play start to finish, and both on piano and guitar. loved it. It is really the album that taught me how to play. And interestingly enough, the opening song on that album is called To the Morning, and that is my alarm clock every day. So
cool. Yeah. So what do you think it is about Dan Fogelberg's music that appeals to you so much and spoke to you as a young person and still speaks to you today?
His lyrics. He has a magic way of writing really, really cool lyrics. But the interesting thing is how he marries the lyrics back to the music itself and how they really join to make the statement. I think a lot of times when you hear music, you'll hear some cool lyrics. And then you'll hear some music and you go, it doesn't really match. That's not the case with Fogelberg. So he used the music itself, the different instruments, the different sounds to really emphasize what he was saying in the lyric itself. To me, that he did that extremely well. And it's one of the things that I try to do in my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Just try to make sure that the music is not the focal point of the song, it's the lyric, you know, and the music should point to the lyric. So
what, how old were you when you wrote your first song?
Yeah, I was pretty young, probably 12, maybe something like that. I actually still have it. I have the lyrics for it. It's pretty bad, just saying. Yeah, I started writing when I was about 12, and then, you know, I didn't write so much when I was really young. I wrote a bit when I was in high school, a few songs when I was in high school, and then really when I got out of school is when I found it interesting to take what was going on in my head and try to put it to a song. So
were you writing songs about girls, or what were you writing songs about?
Yeah, usually. You know, I mean, that's what you do when you're a kid, right? So actually, an interesting story on the Changes album. There's a song called Meant to Be, and it's a pretty song, very nice. But it was actually written partially when I was in high school. In one of my yearbooks, you know, there was a girl. I mean, there's always a girl, right? In one of my yearbooks, one of these girls had written in there. Evidently, we'd had, you know, we dated or whatever and broken up. And she had written this comment in there that said, you know, it's nice to get to know you, blah, 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 blah. If it's meant to be, it will be. And I read that when I was in high school, and I scribbled a couple of lines on a piece of paper, just stuck it in the yearbook. And during the process of recording Changes, I needed one song that was really that whole acoustic, pretty, you know, lovey-dovey thing. And found those few lines that I had written. And actually, interestingly enough, I was flying home from Canada on a business trip and finished the song on the plane.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you write every day, or is it just an organic thing that happens?
I don't sit down to purposely to ever just to say I'm going to write a song today. It's mm-hmm. not how I work. Something has to hit me, you know. So something has to occur, or you know, something has to happen to a friend, or something has to happen to me, and or a situation comes up that intrigues me, you know, that kind of hits me, and then I sit down and write. But as far as you know, just sitting down saying, oh, it's Tuesday, I need to write a song today, that's not how I work. I have to work off the inspiration. So of course there's inspiration everywhere, right? A lot of times what will happen, as you know, I'm a bit busy, so a lot of times what will happen is something will pop into my head and I'll scribble it down on a piece of paper, and sometime later I'll revisit it and work through it. But that's kind of how I work. So some songs take years, you know, like the Meant to Be song took 40 years, roughly.
Yeah.
some songs, you know, maybe not quite that long, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm always curious as a songwriter myself, you know, sometimes I'll write a song and I'll put it away, and then I'll bring it back out months or years later and look at it again, and I'll even rewrite it. At what mm-hmm. point do you feel like a song is done? Because sometimes I don't ever know that one of my songs is finished, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know that there's an algorithm, you know, that there's a mathematical equation that you can use to say, okay, I'm done with this. I think you just know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned bringing something back. There's a song on the Find a Way album that's called The Thrill of the Chase.
Mm-hmm.
This is a song that I wrote, I don't even know how long ago. And I went back and found the old lyric. And much like some of the stuff that you wrote back in the day, you look at it and go, well, that kind of sucks. I need to fix that. And kind of rewrote it, you know, with a little bit different motivation, maybe, or a little different inspiration. And it came out really well. So I think that as a writer, you know, you're not gonna be done, right? And, right, until you know that it's done. And mm-hmm. how you determine that, I don't know. You know, of course, I say that, and then, you know, I've got all the songs that, you know, been recorded and out there and all that stuff. But yet, when I play live, people always tell me I change stuff. So, you know, I guess that's artistic license or a really bad memory, one or the other.
I know what I mean. Just for me personally, whenever I'm performing, you know, when you're recording, you have a much bigger sound. You have, you know, other people playing other instruments. And so when you're doing solo, you kind of got to make up for that space, you know?
Yeah.
And so my arrangements always get changed just because of that. But
sure.
I want to talk about the CD a little bit, Find a Way by Bill Abernathy. I really liked the first CD, Changes, a lot. It was very good. But Find a Way is just awesome. You just went like above the Call of Duty on this one. And the songwriting is just stellar. I was just wondering, where did you record this album at?
So I use LA Audio in Olathe as my studio. You know, over the years, I've recorded at effectively every studio in Kansas City at some point in time. But I look for a room. You know, I'm an acoustic guy, right? Mm-hmm. I play acoustic guitars almost exclusively. And it's all about the room for me. You know, it's all about how the room feels and how my guitars sound in that room. Because, you know, you can do a lot of magic stuff with microphones and all that. But at the end of the day, an acoustic guitar is an acoustic guitar, and it has to sound right. And in my opinion, LA Audio has the best acoustic room in Kansas City that I know of. That's where I use. Of course, they have all the buttons and knobs and, you know, all the cool stuff, and really good guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Lynn Allred is the owner of the studio, and, you know, Lynn's a good guy, great engineer. We have a lot of fun, and I like it just because it's comfortable. You know, I'm very comfortable there, and was the first day that I walked in. So it's a good place for me. I like it.
Yeah. How much influence does the engineer have on arrangements and things like that?
Well, not so much. Ideas, you know, people have different ideas. So the engineer, you know, he has, Lynn has good ideas, and then we've incorporated some of those in some of the songs. I worked with Max Berry on, I don't know if you know Max, but he's a bit of a legend in the Kansas City area, phenomenal musician, really good guy. So he and I co-produced the Find a Way album. Max has ideas. And so, you know, it was interesting, right? So, you know, I travel a bit. So we had recorded what I call a scratch track, the acoustic guitar part and some scratch vocals on a song called Walk Away that's on the album. And then I had to go someplace. I was gone for, I don't know, a month or something. And I came back, and we went back in the studio. They'd sent me some tracks, but they didn't send me that one, you know, because they said, we have something special for you when you get back.
And okay.
I walk into the studio, and I said, all right, so let's hear what you've done with this Walk Away song, because it's kind of a dark song. You know, it's it's got some angst and some anger to it. And they played it for me, and it had this really cute little backup vocal thing on it that was very bubblegummy poppy thing, you know, which is not me by any stretch of the imagination. And the first time that I heard it, I laughed. I mean, I just laughed out loud in the studio, and I'm going, seriously, you guys spent time doing that? And then I listened to it again and listened to it again, and it created kind of a different feel for the song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of cute. I like it. I like it a lot. It evidently is pretty popular, because when I play live, people remember that little backup vocal thing that they did. Mm-hmm. And they sing along with that, which is interesting. But, you know, they have a lot of input. Uh-huh. You know, I don't, you know, I kind of treat my music a bit like I do my corporate world is, you know, you get good people, you give them the tools that they need, and you get out of the way and see what happens, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm really that way with the musicians that I work with at the studio. I mean, for me to go in and chart everything out and say, this is exactly what you need to play and exactly what you need to sing, really doesn't use their talent and their artistic impersonation impressions. I really just like to throw it out there and say, hey, let's see what we can do with this.
Right.
Yeah. And then we tweak it around a bit. You know, to me, that's fun. I remember on the Changes album, we brought in Janet Jameson, who's a phenomenal musician. And we were recording a, a song, and I knew that I wanted it to have some angst to it. And she was playing the violin, and I walked in and I said, "Janet, I absolutely love what you do. I love what you're doing. This is beautiful, but I need more anger. Can you make it more anger?" And I'll never forget, she looked at me and she said, "Second husband, hit record." It's great. We had a lot of fun.
And you can find that, you can tap into something that makes you angry and use it. That's good. You have a very talented son as well, Chad Abernathy. We also play him on KC Cafe Radio. Did he work on this CD with you at all or give you any input on it?
Well, no. Well, Chad always has input. So, you know, when you're going through the recording process, especially for me, because, you know, it's very hit and miss because, you know, I can't just take a month and go record an album, right? So we do daily mix downs of the songs of what we've worked on that particular day. And Chad would always listen to those. And, you know, he has, you know, Chad and I are a bit different musically, but he always has some really good input. So, you know, I always tell him he's my bridge to now, you know, it's kind of, he and I are a bit of that was then and this is now. So I'm kind of from back in the day and he's a lot more current. So he always has some input and, you know, he always has some really good ideas.
Yeah. And I know from time to time you guys will do each other's songs as well. So.
Well, he likes to play my songs because my songs are better than his. Not just joking, but yeah, he records and he recorded a few of my songs on his CD and he plays a few of them live. I more quote his lyrics than I do play his songs. Mm-hmm. Chad has some really, really, really cool lyrics. And a lot of times when I'm playing and I'm telling a story, I'll quote a few of his lyrics because he's really has some insightful things. So,
yeah. So what was your criteria for the songs on this CD? Did you want it to have a certain theme or a certain feel?
Yeah, so I wanted to I wanted to explore the whole find a way theme across the board, right? Because, you know, if you look at it at a really surfacial level, you know, you find a way trying to figure out this work-life balance thing. But if you go to another level and you look at the different areas of your life that you need to maintain balance, you know, whether that is an emotional relationship, a love life thing, you know, your family, you know, all of the things that pull on your time. So I really wanted to try to maintain that theme through the whole thing, through the whole album, to be able to understand what that balance is and how you can figure that out. So there's a little bit of a balance story actually to each song. It worked out pretty well. We opened it up with Find a Way to kind of set the theme, and then we ended it with this. Actually, it may be my favorite song on the CD. It's a song called Where I Need to Be. Mm-hmm. That just pretty much says, I'm good. I found it. You know, of course, that was a fleeting moment because it's an ongoing battle, right?
But right.
At that point in time when I sat and wrote that song, I was good. I was just where I needed to be. So we tried to, you know, filter that through the whole album. So
tell me about the song Start to Start. What is that song about?
Imagination. It actually was originally titled The Imagination Song. So I find it interesting. So I went through a bit of a life change a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, where a marriage from 35 years dissolved, right? And again, it's not, you know, my ex and I are great friends and she's a fine, great person and we still hang out and life is good, you know, but it just came to an end. And I always find it interesting how when something like that happens, the amount of rumors that go along, you know. And so actually at the show in St. Louis, I tried something and it worked out pretty well. So have you ever played this little game where people sit in a circle and some people call it secrets and some people call it whispers and the first person whispers something into the next person's ear and then, you know, it goes around the circle, right? And each person hears it, you know, with their understanding and their interpretation and their imagination takes it. And invariably, by the end of the circle, what started is completely different than what ended, right? And I found it interesting that during that time, how many of these rumors, you know, that I would hear from people and you know, people's imagination taken and going places. You know, I love my imagination. I use it not only in my music, but it's a very, very big part of what I do in the corporate world. And I love it, but you have to be able to kind of control it, you know? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, imaginations will take you places that you don't need to go. So that's really what it's about. I have a friend who mentioned that she had these dreams, and you know, she had all these thoughts and all these things about where I'd walk away and disappear from some place that we were at, whether it be a restaurant or wherever, and all of a sudden I'm just gone. And so it was interesting. It was very interesting. But that's really what it's about, is being able to use your imagination productively, right?
Yeah.
And not let it take you down that lovely rabbit trail that we all like to go down.
Well, you mentioned that you write songs from your imagination, but you also write story songs as well. What's an example of that on the CD?
Well, they're all a story. Probably the best one, a story song on this, is probably the Goodbye Will Never Come Again song. It's very pretty song, but it has to do with, it's actually a threefold song. So it's a confession and an apology and a promise all in one song. So I ran into some folks from way back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had been friends, and someone we dated a bit, And you look at that from an emotional standpoint, and I see that the relationships kind of have three phases, right? You have a start and a middle and the end. And I've always thought that I'm pretty good at the start, because I like to tell jokes and have fun and all that. And
mm-hmm.
In the middle of a relationship, is where you kind of become really good friends, and I think I'm pretty good at that. But where I really suck is the end. Yeah. And so I looked at that, and I ran across this person, and we'd been, we dated when we were kids, just babies. And when it ended, I pretty much just said, see you later, goodbye, and walked off. And you look back at that, and you think of all the different situations that you could be in life, and that's really just not a good answer at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a story in that song about that relationship and, how we'd become friends and all that. And then all of a sudden, I kind of freaked out and just said goodbye. So, it's a confession that I know that I do that, that I did that in the past. And it's an apology saying, I'm sorry that I did that. And it's kind of a promise that says, I promise to you that goodbye will never come again. So.
You always seem to do a cover on your CD as well. This CD, you did a cover of John Denver's My Sweet Lady. Why did you decide to record that song?
Well, here you go. You like stories. Here it is. So when I was in this is going way back, right? When I was in junior high, they had a talent show, and music teacher at the school asked me if I would play in this talent show. And I said, sure. Well, this was like in 1973 or four, something like that, right? And I was still, fascinated with Dan Fogelberg's Home Free album. Well, he has a song on there that's called Looking for a Lady. Beautiful song. It's actually on the Find a Way CD as well. So I wanted to play that song in that talent show. And so I did, went to the tryouts and played the song. And they just, oh my God, you have to play, you have to play. We just loved it so much, but you can't play that song. And I said, oh really, why not? And they said, well, it's too suggestive. So there's a line in the song, right, that says, I'm looking for a lady to fill my empty bed. So even in those days, I guess Big Brother was watching over me or something, but they thought that was too suggestive. So what I did was I switched and played the John Denver My Sweet Lady song. And interestingly enough, it's one of the more requested, particularly if I play, in somewhere around in the Kansas City area, it's invariable that somebody will request me to play that song. So what we did was, I kind of promised back in those days that someday I would record that song. And so what we did in the studio was, there's no fanciness there. We pointed about 9 microphones at me, and I just played it live. It frustrated the guys at the studio because I didn't do it on a click track. So the tempo is not, exactly what you'd call perfect, so I just wanted to replicate that performance from back in the day, kind of live. And so that's how we recorded it in the studio, and that's what's on the album, is just a really live version of that song.
I like it. It's a really raw, beautiful version of it. I mean, that's sort of the way that the song should be played, in my opinion. It doesn't need all the bells and whistles. It just needs to be simple and there,
Yeah.
So it's a good version of it.
Oh, thanks.
Are you going to do any special shows, special promotions for it?
Not really. I mean, you know, like I said, you know how busy I am. So, I'm going to play a few shows. Obviously, you know, we're working with Casey Cafe Radio, which is a great friend to music in Kansas City. You're working with me a bit. You know, I've got some of the other outlets that I've worked with over the years. So, you know, it's out there. It's getting a little bit of love from here and there. But as far as, you know, like doing a tour to promote it, yeah, probably not. I'll play a few shows when it fits into the schedule. I really enjoy that. We will play one show in the spring, full band, which will be something somewhat unique for me.
Where's that at? Where's
that? Well, I don't know. I don't have a setup because I can't find the right venue, you know. Okay. So I'm particular about when I play live. There'll be no TVs.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do the whole, you know, like I said, when I started playing, you know, it was back in the coffee shop, really small venue, Cowtown Ballroom type, where people came to hear the music. Maybe today that's not so common. Actually, the new record bar facility that they have off Grand is a really good space. That will probably be where we play, but I don't have it all put together yet. So, but, you know, with my travel schedule, which was supposed to be lighter in the last half of the year, it didn't work out that way. So I don't have that all put together, but I'm excited about that because I'll be playing with the Max Berry Band. They'll be the group that plays with me, and they are really, really, really outstanding musicians. So it'll be a fun night.
That's awesome. Yeah, make sure you let me know about that.
I will.
I know one of the things you are doing is you're doing T-shirts with your album cover on it.
Yeah, I do.
Through the website. That is really cool.
Yeah, thanks. That was actually a friend of mine, Scott Anderson of AndersonArtwork.com, does all my photography stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And he's really, really good at it. And so he and I were having lunch one day, actually, and just kicking around some ideas. And he said, well, you know, we ought to have some T-shirts. So we kind of designed it up. You know, he's an artist. I'm not an artist. And I wanted to get the album cover incorporated into it one way. So they're really pretty cool.
They are very cool.
So you got the album cover on the front, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the back, you have this, the guy, you know, the balance guy from the album cover is extracted and blown up big across the back. And, you know, they're cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's worth getting the CD right alone. And you have some CDs that you're selling as well. They're signed CDs that you can get through the website.
Yeah. If you go to my website, which is just BillAbernathy.com, and go to the store, I think is what I call it, or buy stuff or something, you can order different things. So obviously you can order the Find a Way CD you know, the T-shirts are on there now, kind of. You can do all that. You could build a bundle. The Find a Way CD is much more produced than the Changes CD. I had a rule on the Changes CD that we wouldn't play any instruments that weren't acoustic. That was kind of my thing. We broke that rule with Find a Way. It's got some more bigger production activities involved in it. But if you want to go to the website, BillAbernathy.com, you can get all the CDs, you know, all signed stuff. There's pictures, there's stuff. And if I know you and you send me a note on my website, I'll personalize all that for you. So you can pick up all the CDs and pick up a T-shirt, and then you can be a fan.
Yeah, and there's some great pictures there of all your guitars, too. So
yeah, with some of my guitars. So, yeah.
There's a room of guitars on one of those pictures there. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, so, well, they're my babies. Yeah.
So people can get your CD at where? CD Baby, your website, iTunes?
Sure.
All the old
iTunes,
normal places?
Yeah, Amazon, you know, all the places. It's out digitally everywhere. If you're an MP3 person, right, and you do downloads all the time, that's a great place to go get it. You know, iTunes, it does a good job in their quality size, so does CD Baby. Amazon does a good quality job. Now, if you're a bit of a more of an audiophile and you listen closely to music, my suggestion is you get on my website or go to CD Baby and buy the CD that doesn't have the MP3 compression thrown at it, because sonically I think it's much more interesting. So
yeah, I agree. I'm the same way. I'm not a big download person. I'm more of a CD person. So Bill, it's been a great pleasure talking with you today. Good to hear about your history, and I mean, I found out a lot about you today I didn't know.
Yeah, it's always fun. It's great talking to you because we always have a good conversation. So I appreciate what you do and everything that KC Cafe Radio does to promote the local artists and the regional artists here in the Kansas City area. And I think you guys do a great job. So I'm very proud to be associated with y'all. Very nice.
Thank you, Bill. We're proud to be associated with you, too. So this is Bill Abernathy, and his new CD is called Find a Way. You can find it at his website, which is BillAbernathy.com, or you can find it on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon, all the normal sites you might go to for music. And pick up a copy. And for the album cover alone, it's worth getting. So So thanks a lot, Bill, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.